Life without hope. Now that's living hell.
This is what real hope looks like. This is the word that those hopeless people need to hear. This is the word that 3,000 people that try to commit suicide today, the 3,000 that will try to commit tomorrow, 3,000 that will try to commit on Monday, this is the word that they need to hear, is that there is hope.
It's real superpower. It's hope. There's hope. Hope.
Welcome to Victims and Villains. This is the show where we talk nerd, we talk hope, and we speak nothing else. I'm your host, Captain Nostalgia, and for this episode, myself and my co-host of this episode, we are Venom. That's right, this is our Venom. This is our Venom review episode, so please help me in welcoming. He's been on our show not once, but twice before. Mr. Ryan Silberstein, what's up, man?
Good morning. Yeah, I'm excited to talk about Venom. Since we last spoke, we changed over the website that I run. We were called Cinadelphia, but we are now Cinema 76. That's cinema76.com. So I was able to see Venom a little early, review it for the website, and then also, well, we probably won't talk about it on my podcast, The Shame Files, because we only talk about old movies, so...
Yeah, so full disclosure, I have not read Ryan's review, and full disclosure, Jake and I have briefly talked about it, but please tell me a welcoming from Haven House Podcast, Jacob Gunther.
What's up? How are you doing?
What's up, man? So this has been a long time coming, because our resident Superman guy, Ron Webster, introduced us about a year ago. You gave us our first live ministry event, so tell us a little bit about what Haven is all about.
Well, Haven is a house church that I started a couple years ago in the Hampton Roads area of Virginia. I've been in ministry pretty much my whole life and came off the mission field and decided, hey, I'm going to start something on my own. So I started this house church that's been growing for the past like 4 or 5 years. And as you said, our resident Superman guy, Ronnie Webster, I met him during that time and he connected me to the Identity Network. So I've been working with him to build that over the past few years and met you and stuff. So it's just a place where I try to build it up so that people can come be who they are, learn more about who they are, and learn more about unlocking their spiritual giftings and unlocking who they are in Christ, and trying to create a place where you can have harder conversations that you normally wouldn't be able to have in like a church setting. So that's the very Reader's Digest version of it, and also obviously helping build that network and building what Ronnie is doing as well. So,
yeah. So if you guys want to check out a little bit more about Haven, you actually don't need to go to Virginia to experience it. They've recently just launched a podcast version of the teachings that they do. And you guys can find that on Google Play, iTunes, and I believe anywhere you can find podcasts, correct?
Yes. We're officially on Google Play. I'm waiting to get iTunes up actually, and I'm waiting to hear back from Spotify. So it's up on Google Play and I'm working on those other avenues as we speak.
Getting an RSS feed to different places, it's a pain in the butt sometimes.
There's a lot of foundation work.
Yeah.
All right. So before we start talking about Venom, I want to pose a question to Ryan here. So what's why the change from Cinadelphia to Cinema 76?
There were a couple of reasons. The actual founder of Cinadelphia.com, Eric Bresler, he also runs a film festival that uses the Cinadelphia name. And since it's his name and he came up with it and we were kind of moving in different directions, changing the website's name lets him kind of keep the Cinadelphia brand for the film festival and allows us to do some other things that we weren't maybe able to do before by having our own name out there. So
that's cool. All right. So for those of you guys that may or may not remember, Ryan also hosts a podcast called The Shame Files. And I'm going to give him a platform. What is this? If our listeners are new to the show, tell us a little bit about what The Shame Files is.
Yeah, so my co-host and I, Jill, we're both film critics, but there's a lot of movies that we haven't seen. And so every episode on the Shame Files podcast, we watch a movie that's new to us, that's a classic or cult classic, or, in some ways we felt like we should have watched it. previously, and then we talk about that movie in depth, kind of approach it with fresh eyes. Right now for October, we are doing All Monsters Month. So we just did the original Mummy movie from 1932. We did Gremlins recently. So it's a weekly episode. We're usually up like Monday or Tuesday.
Man, I'm like heartbroken when people say that they've never seen the original Gremlins.
But yeah, so I had definitely seen it when I was like too young to, like, I didn't really remember much of it. So I was counting it as a fresh viewing. And yeah, there's a drive-in up in the Poconos in Pennsylvania that was showing both Gremlins and Gremlins 2 back-to-back at the drive-in. So we were able to head up there for that and, you know, kind of have a fun night out of it too.
Dang. I sorely missed out. I would love to see Gremlins on the big screen, but something else that we got to see on the big screen was the most recent outing from Sony's attempt at a Spider-Verse without Spider-Man. note that this is no spoilers. Jake, give your thoughts on the, what are your thoughts on Venom with Tom Hardy?
I liked it. And I think, you know, you and I had talked a little bit about it yesterday, was that I've been so excited for this movie ever since I heard that they were going to make it. I had my apprehensions, like, how are they going to do it with, you know, without Spider-Man? How is that going to work out? But ever since I heard the movie was coming out, I've been excited for it. Venom's always been one of my favorite characters in like the comics and whatnot. So, I mean, overall, I thought it was good. They did so many things I feel like that they did right. And there were definitely some things that they could have tweaked and, you know, done differently. But overall, I thought I was good. It was not perfect by any means, but it definitely was an enjoyable watch. And I definitely would probably watch it again.
Ryan, what about you, man?
Yeah, so I'm a big Spider-Man fan. Venom is not one of my favorite Spider-Man characters. So I was curious to see what they were going to do with it. I didn't really have high expectations going into it based on some of the stuff from like the trailers and things, but I liked it in spite of it not being very good, is how I would say it. Like, I had a lot of fun watching it, but the things I enjoyed about it, like, it's not, like I said, it's not that I would necessarily call it a good movie, but it sort of, Tom Hardy's performance is super fun, and there's a couple really great moments in it that we can definitely talk about more. But overall, it was like, this is it. The title of my review was like, Venom is what 2000s nostalgia looks like, because it reminded me, like, it took me way back to watching the Ben Affleck Daredevil movie.
Oh, no.
Where I was like, where it's like, okay, like, we're getting, like, it was in that era of like, oh, we're getting superheroes being taken seriously finally. And so, like, I'm just thankful that, like, it looks like the character I recognize, and, like, you know, it's, they're wearing the right costumes and everybody's called the right name and stuff. But, like, you know, it's still not, it's almost like they didn't remember how to make a superhero movie.
That's fair. So mine, I think, is kind of a defense of both of you guys. There were things that I appreciate about it, but things that again don't make it a good movie. I would even kind of compare it to maybe Suicide Squad, where there are elements of it that really entertained me, kind of like but I never walked away from it feeling like, oh dang, this was a waste of my time. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed myself. I felt like Tom Hardy did a really good job. I thought that the film balanced itself well between Hardy's arc and the Life Foundation, kind of building up these symbiotes. And I'm not gonna say the villain. I feel like it was kind of a missed opportunity, and Michelle Williams didn't need to be there. But I mean, like, overall, like, I feel like it's still a pretty solid attempt at this character. But I can definitely see where people are, you know, kind of talking about the 2000s, early 2000s kind of like comic book heroes. Because at first I was kind of like, I don't understand like what people are talking about. And just hearing you kind of talk about it, Ryan, like, I understand a little bit more of it now.
Yeah, I'm almost like, obviously there's an Eminem song that's in the film and like on the soundtrack. And, you know, I think the fact that it's not a Rob Zombie song is the biggest thing that makes it not quite exactly falling in that time period. You know, but like I said, when that Daredevil movie came out, I was like, Like I was so happy to get one of my favorite comic book characters, like in a movie that was like, again, like he had the right powers. He was called the right names. He was a lawyer. Like they hit all of the things on paper, but the movie still isn't a good movie. Even though like, again, I enjoyed watching it then. If I watched it now, I'd probably still kind of enjoy it, but you know, it's not going to be among the all time great movies in this genre.
No, but I mean, like, I still feel like it's going to go down as still like kind of that enjoyable ride where you're going to have that split, because you're either, it's one of those films that I feel like you're either really going to like, or you're really going to love, or really going to like, or really going to hate.
Yeah. So, and like, for me, I think one of the highest points for me, just going off of like what you guys are saying about comparing it to Daredevil and stuff, is that it did hit all those key moments. And like one of the things that just tickled me as like a fanboy, especially as like a Venom fanboy, is just the fact that he looked so good in the movie and he sounded right in the movie. And also, like you were talking about the different arcs, like I love the fact that they took time to show Eddie's arc, like without Spider-Man, but show his arc in almost the way that it happened in the comic books. Which was one of the things like was concerning about, like, how are you going to do this character without Spider-Man? And I feel like they, in a way, accomplished that. How you saw him fall, and then it made more sense when he bonds and whatever his character, like, after the fact. But watching it, you know, the thing that made me enjoy it more and more was that I would sit there and then I would think back to like Spider-Man 3 and thinking about Topher Grace and thinking about, you know, I was literally sitting in the theater and I'm like, man, he's not shaking a police captain's, you know, hand and saying, hi, I'm Brock, sir, Edward Brock Jr. Nice to meet you. I'm dating your daughter. You know, I'm like, this is so much better than that, you know, and just, it, you know, and in that way, I can't help but say that it's good and enjoy it just to see that character portrayed like in that way, like, and it did take off the boxes. Like it definitely took a lot of liberties with the direction that they wanted to go, because I mean, Spider-Man's not there. That's half of Venom's character, you know, and they're trying to fill those holes. And it really felt like there were, you could tell just by Tom Hardy's performance that he just definitely has a love for the character. You could see that in his performance, and even in the way, because he does Venom's voice as well. So even in the way that Venom talks to Eddie in the movie, it's like there's that symbiosis, if you will, of just that love of the character. I mean, those were, I think, some of the high points for me, just as far as the way he looked and the way he sounded. Like the passion for the character definitely bled through what, you know, was obviously some other things that they tried to throw in there.
All right. We are going to get ready and jump into spoilers in just a second. But if you guys are listening to this right now, you or someone you know is struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, please reach out. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. There are 123 suicides that take place each and every day. And when you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 successful suicides. That's one death roughly every 40 seconds. So if you or someone you know is struggling, I encourage you guys to please reach out and get help. We have the reason we push the content that we do is so that you guys can know that there is hope, that you do have value, and that you do have worth. You guys can reach out to us on any of our social media, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. You guys can also call the Suicide Lifeline 1-800-273-8255, or also text anonymously 274-1741. Or even go to victimsandvillains.net/hope, where you guys can find even more resources past those. And just please stay with us one more day. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
The Wildcard Chronicles is a story of family, of loyalty. There's something for everyone in this story. You'll see and learn about two brothers, more importantly, two siblings, who are learning to deal with the death of their father. Someone who they have grown to love and view as their hero, the strength of their family. And they're learning how to deal with the loss of him and how they move forward with life without him. So for me, it really hits home for me, especially as somebody who's been involved with this story since the beginning, and we've been doing this for many years now. But especially as I personally in my own life have lost my father, every time I get to see this story in a different light and bring up different aspects of it that a lot of people will be able to relate to when you're reading this book.
This is an amazing project. Everyone involved has poured their heart and soul into it. And now we ask for your support to see it through. So with that being said,
come on, join us.
Join us.
Come on and join us.
A new time, a new era calls for new heroes. Find the hero within. Join us.
Are you going to behave yourself?
No.
Eddie, you are my ride.
Mask!
Copy. That power, it makes me super fast.
We can do whatever we want.
This is awesome.
So many snacks, so little time.
What are you?
We are Venom.
Venom. Rated PG-13, October 5th.
All right, we are Venom. We are back. I'm just going to say that probably the entire show. and we are getting ready to head into Venom spoiler territory. So if you guys have not hosted with the film yet, we're talking spoilers. So make sure you guys hit pause, run to your local cinema, go support them, go see Venom, and then come back and hit play. But I'm going to jump in. I'm not even sure where you guys really kind of want to jump into talking about this film. Anyone want to, Jake, what would you like to go first with this movie?
There are so many places we could go, I feel like, and then there are also so little. I think talking about the, you know, you mentioned Riot being, because we can say that now because we're in the spoiler. So if you've listened this far, sucks, you know, go back and watch the movie. But you know, having Riot be the main villain being a missed opportunity, and I kind of agree with that. You know, because with the Life Foundation storyline, like in the comics, there were like four different symbiotes that they had there. And we saw those in the movie, like the different canisters, the different colors, they all are all different characters, which was like a nice Easter egg if you know that story, because they have like the gray one that kills Isaac, which that was an interesting scene with him in like the chamber. That was Agony, I'm pretty sure, because he was gray. And then there was a yellow one that we never really saw again, but we saw it in the truck that I'm pretty sure was Scream, who was like the female symbiote, which they kind of did a nod to that later on in the movie. But when I heard that they were going to do like the Life Foundation, quote unquote, which they did a good job in the movie with the arc, I felt like there could have been a little bit more to which villain he fought, especially since, you know, with, especially if you read like Lethal Protector and stuff, like Venom's on the streets half the times, like protecting people, and he has some villains, but it's more about like his story. And I feel like just having one symbiote fight him and just one person going after him was kind of a missed opportunity, especially when you open up that storyline where there were like four different ones that he had to deal with. So, I mean, what did you guys think of Riot being the villain?
I actually want to go back to something you also mentioned in terms of like having read the Lethal Protector storyline. Like the first half of that is all about Eddie protecting homeless people because they're the only people who will take him in after, you know, whatever has gone down in New York. And so, one of the things, like, I like that the film nodded to that with his relationship with the woman who was like, you know, he gave her like $20 for the newspaper, and like,
yeah,
you know, I wish they had leaned into that more, because I think that's a more interesting angle and makes Eddie Brock more of a sympathetic good guy. Whereas I think the biggest difference between the way he's like written in Lethal Protector and in the movie is that like he's a little more like he's a little more selfish in the movie. Like he's doing good things, but like sometimes it feels like it's more about his profile and like raising his profile than it is about like doing the right thing. where I think like leaning into like, oh, like homeless people are disappearing. Like if they had just gone like down that road about, you know, maybe that's how he gets involved with the Life Foundation. Like, I think it would have improved the whole movie. So that's the one thing that to me was like actually the most disappointing thing. Like, I like that it was kind of there, but, you know, I think that's something really, you know, unique to his story that we should have seen more of.
No, and I agree with that. I think that would have been a more of a driving force in the movie rather than, because it's almost like the movie felt like, okay, we have to have like a supervillain battle and there has to be a supervillain. And we have to have that because it's a superhero movie. And Venom is an anti-hero. He is like, he's not going to go off, you know, and be a superhero. You know what I mean? He's going to be like on the streets. He's like going to be on the streets protecting the people that are taking care of him because of what he's done, you know? And I agree with you. That would have been so much better if it had been like, hey, people are disappearing. Let me follow this trail, rather than it being like, they just kind of rushed that and it was like, oh crap, the Life Foundation's after you now, so this is why Venom bonds with you, kind of thing. And which that goes back to, they did that because, like, you know, and they made, I feel like talking about Eddie being kind of a jerk in the movie, I feel like they almost had to make him a jerk because they took out Spider-Man, because in the comics it's like Spider-Man is what makes Eddie a jerk, you know. He's not necessarily a jerk, but Spider-Man ruins his life, Peter ruins his life. And so he, you know, he's like, I, you know, Spider-Man's the reason. And same thing with the, because Venom, the symbiote is half of that, you know, Peter rejecting the symbiote, there's that combined bitterness and that rage. And that's why he's a Spider-Man villain, not an everybody villain. But even so, that's what makes him who he is. So when you take that out, they almost had to say like, which, and I'm, again, I'm glad they kind of did that arc at the beginning where he does lose everything. And they took out the fact that it's Spider-Man that causes him to lose everything. But still, that built that, to me, that was like, they needed to do that. Because when I saw the trailers and everything, I was really worried that it would be like, because of Venom, he loses everything.
You know
what I mean? Because I saw the trailers, I was like, I really hope he doesn't get Venom. And then that's why he loses his job. And then that's why he loses his girlfriend. And that's why, and I loved that they kind of, you know, made him a jerk a little bit. Because then he has the chance to lose everything before then, and then you still have that bitterness and anger and rage when they bond.
And then I do like how they made, you know, he loses everything because of the Life Foundation, and also because of the choices that he makes and how he's approaching that. You know, and I like that bringing him down to such a low point gives him a chance at, like, you know, some kind of redemption. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have everything back the way it was at the end of the movie, but, you know, he's definitely a better person for it, which I think is like that part of the movie I think really worked for me in terms of like the progression of his character through it.
And I think that too, like, you know, you guys are talking about the villain with it. It just, I don't know, like they, I felt like they, one thing that they built up very kind of the introduction of Riot with the plane crash in the beginning to the, like, throughout the, I guess, like the course of like that South American country. Then you have the little girl coming to America, coming to, you know, Carlton Drake, like that took so long to build up. And then when you finally got Riot, it just, it didn't feel like the payoff was there.
Worth it. Yeah.
And it, like, I loved the final battle. Like the final battle to me, it kind of, the way that it played out, it almost kind of reminded me of the final battle between Zod and Superman and Man of Steel. Like, I kind of have that feel, just with, it was just more visually appealing because you had the symbiotes, you know, kind of like stretching and coming together. It was almost like an accordion with superheroes and supervillains.
Yeah, I love those two moments where they sort of like either super slow-mo or like totally pause it, and you can sort of see you know, Eddie,
where one ends Carlton and one begins.
Yeah, like those moments were really cool. I mean, I wanted to like that ending fight more. I mean, a lot of it is just like they're both really dark colored characters, and it's at night, and like the lighting isn't that great. And it's like, I get that you're hiding, you know, what might be not great CGI in there, but like, there was a good chunk of that where I was like, I have no idea what's going on right now. So when it stopped to show me exactly what was going on, like, those moments were awesome. But the rest was just kind of like, okay, it's two computer blobs, like, just going back and forth for a couple minutes here.
I can understand that. I can see that. Like, that was kind of something that I kind of did too. Like, where I would be like, "Oh, which is that Drake? Is that Brock?" Like, you know, you're kind of like going back and forth with trying to like distinguish which one is which. And I don't know. Like to me, like the way that they build it, like they build both really nicely, but it's never kind of. I don't know. I think like another problem that I had with Drake as a villain is like the transition between like eager scientist to like mad scientist. Like, it happened so quickly. Like, there really wasn't like a development there at all. That was kind of something that I really had a lot of problems with. And to me, I feel like a lot of those problems existed because if you would have just taken out the Michelle Williams character, her arc could have been better spent towards like developing up Drake a little bit more. And so I don't know if you guys felt the same, but like the Michelle Williams character in this just really just did not feel like she had to belong. There's one cool scene that she has, and then the rest is just like just go away, because no one in reality stays friends with their exes after they break up.
I mean, I do like that she's like sympathetic to him and having lost everything. And I mean, she's also in my favorite scene of the movie. But like, I think one of the things I appreciated about the movie that surprised me, and this was, Jake, going back to something that you were talking about too, is like the progression of like how long between he starts to bond with the symbiote and he really becomes Venom. Like, I really enjoyed how they sort of stretched that out a little bit. Like, they didn't rush through that. And, you know, the scene where he's like eating frozen food and like food that's in the trash and then throwing up and feeling sick and like the whole stuff with the MRI, like that was awesome. And then my favorite scene in the movie is when he goes into that restaurant, you know, and surprises and like has to talk to her and her new boyfriend. And he's like trying to eat all this food and explain all the crazy stuff that's going on. He ends up in the lobster tank and he's eating like raw lobsters and stuff. Like, that scene is really funny and also like really effective, because it feels like, you know, it's that thing of like, if I was in that situation, like what, like how would I react? And like, he's reacting in a way that like is totally justifiable, but he looks totally crazy to everybody else. So I liked Michelle Williams in that role, but I feel like there's not enough of her in the movie. Like, they needed to do more with her. They needed to do more with the villain. Like, you know, I don't know which one they should have tilted towards, but I think both of them are definitely underserved.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And honestly, if I feel like after they broke up, she should have, like, they maybe should have just not had her in the movie. like when he keeps going back to her, I was almost like, okay, like, you know, there should be more like hostility from her towards him, you know, like they almost played it out like they had to have her there for, you know, some reason. And even by the end of the movie, the door is not like shut on them, and which kind of goes against like, you know, part of who Venom is, you know. It's like he doesn't, because if you read other Venom comics, there are other women that he tried to be with and stuff, and it just never works out because of who he is, you know? And mm-hmm. I think it, and I feel like that was almost that another little caveat of just like, this is a superhero movie, so there's gotta be like the girl, you know, and that's gotta be there. You know, and I agree with you, like all the scenes with him coming home and like eating and all that stuff were just so fun. And I love that it was actually like, it was showing like something's different. Like, he's physically not himself anymore. And I kind of feel like they left her in there as almost like a plot piece so that he had someone to talk to or to go to. Mm-hmm. And that's more of what she served, which, you know, is not fair to the actress or to the character really. You know, especially when you have two characters there, like halfway through the movie, I was thinking like, why is the symbiote so quiet during this whole thing? Like, at this point you could have like a really cool scene with Eddie talking to himself, you know, figuring out what's going on and figuring out like the Life Foundation, or, you know, or maybe even going to a doctor on his own, you know, without the plot piece, even though the scene at the restaurant is great, not denying that. But that whole thing is like him going to, you know, figure out what's wrong with him. And the only reason is that she's there. You know what I mean? I don't mm-hmm. know if that makes sense. And everything with Riot, I honestly feel like they felt like they needed to have a villain, and I felt like they were it's almost like they were not. Well, since we're in spoilers, I'm just going to say it. They could have done different villains, but those villains would have not had a definitive end with all the character building that they had with Eddie. This movie was about Eddie. So when you get to the end of the movie, it's like, okay, well, we have to have a boss. So here's this villain that he's going to fight. Anything else that they did would have opened it up to another movie, and they don't want to leave it open. Even though there are like the end credit scenes and stuff. I almost got that sense by the end of the movie. It was like, okay, here's this. How do you guys like it? Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't want to put anything else or leave it open-ended in any way. And Riot to them was the best way to do that. It's like, okay, we've built up Eddie. Now here's Riot. You're going to have this battle and it's over. What do you guys think? Right. You know what I mean?
Because no one's going to be like, oh, Riot needs to come back for another movie.
Right, exactly. It was basically a throwaway villain. It was like, okay, well, we got to have somebody. So here's, we'll just wing him in and, you know, we'll have this awesome boss battle. Because if they had announced anybody else, you know, it would have been a bigger deal.
Well, I think that too, you needed the Life Foundation to serve as the introduction for the symbiotes to Earth, because I mean, like, yes, you could do like a UFO crash landed onto our planet, brought with us these, but that whole arc with them coming into it, they really, I feel like since the Dark Knight, or even Batman Begins, like we as a population, like we have this ideology of what a superhero film should be, and superhero films are, and you see that with scenes like the restaurant, or with him eating the tater tots and the day old chicken, or however it is, you know, like you know, you see those because like those are scenes that ground this film in modern world versus, you know, fantastical. So like I really think that they did it because, you know, if they would have done, obviously, when this film was announced, a lot of people were presuming that the main villain, main antagonist was going to be not the Life Foundation, but it was actually going to be Carnage, because that's probably the most famous of the Venom supervillains. And so while they hinted at it in the post-credits scene, you don't get that. Like the Life Foundation just kind of seems like it could be the example of not only grounding the film, explaining how the symbiotes got to Earth without Spider-Man, and really kind of giving you that final boss battle that a lot of people wanted to see.
Yeah, and it follows, like you mentioned, you know, Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, and it follows that same pattern of, like, you know, in the first movie we'll have a villain that, like, you know, the comic book fans will recognize, and they'll know, like, the whole backstory too, but we can save the big high-profile villain for the sequel. You know, it's, you know, the mid-credit scene is basically the same thing as Gary Oldman turning over that playing card at the end of Batman Begins, where it's like, okay, now is the real, like, the next one is it's really gonna escalate.
Yeah, I can agree with that, and like it's a safe thing to do for this kind of first time movie. You know, as much as it was like, why is Riot in there? It makes sense if they have a long term, you know, game plan into. So you both have mentioned that post credit scene. So what did you guys think of that? I'm curious before I say anything.
If they make a Venom 2, I really hope they get Woody Harrelson a better wig. Is my big takeaway from that. Because I was like, okay, like the red curly hair, like it didn't look great. But no. I think I think Carnage, to me, like, I always think of him as sort of like a one note kind of villain. Like, he's so over the top in terms of, you know, like he's already a serial killer, and then he gets a symbiote, and then from there, like, there's not, sorry, I have no idea what's going on outside, but from there, like, I don't know where you go with that, but casting Woody Harrelson in that role is like the best possible outcome, I think, because you get a real actor who can make that into a character and like beyond what's on the page, and at least give it, like, you know, real screen presence and everything. So like I'm more interested because it's Woody Harrelson than I would be if it was somebody else.
Yeah, agreed. Like, to me, like, when I've talked to anyone who's actually seen this film so far, and they'll be like, oh, what do you think of that post-credit scene? I'm always like, my first reaction is, that wig, though. Like, I loved the introduction of it. Like, to have this kind of, this scene where he's using his fingernails to actually carve Welcome Eddie into his cell block, I thought that was a great sequence. The fact that he essentially wanted to solely see, like, he wouldn't talk to the FBI, like, he just wanted to talk to Eddie Brock. Like, to me, like, there's a lot of intrigue that one little scene set up, and that's really what I want to see. Like, I love Woody Harrelson as an actor. I love Tom Hardy as an actor, and Woody Harrelson, it's been a long time since I've seen him. Like, felt like I've seen him as a villain, especially as a superhero villain. Like, I really want to see that. And, you know, it like, serial killers that have superpowers, like, that's such an interesting concept, and I want to see that, and I want to explore that more. So, like, I really hope that this movie makes, makes enough to justify a sequel. But I say that, and then we have 5 Transformers movies, so.
Anything's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and I loved that post-credit scene. His wig could have had less curls. I don't mind that it was red. I don't even mind that it was, like, poofy, because in the comics he's drawn like that. It's straight hair, but it's all, like, matted and, you know, weird and crazy, you know. So he did look a little off, but when he's writing on the wall, and then when he speaks and he's, you know, just that tone of voice that he struck, it was almost like quivering, and I was just like, this, I was just so happy in the theater. I was punching my friend Josh, who was with me. I started punching him because I realized what was happening. And, I really hope that comes to fruition. And it is an interesting concept. And even when they created Carnage, even the creations of Venom and Carnage in the comics are both interesting stories. They, you know, Venom was a fan idea that they bought for, like, nothing. And they gave it to Todd McFarlane, and he ran with it, you know. And Carnage was basically, they said, we want the Joker. You know, so we're going to make the Joker, and then we're going to give him superpowers. So in the comics, by the time, you know, Cletus Cassidy gets the Carnage symbiote in him, he's already done half the things that the Joker has done, you know. So, which brings me to the other thing that I thought about, like, the Venom movie. If they do a next one, if they do another one, and it does actually have Woody Harrelson playing Carnage, it cannot be a PG-13 rating. It can't. And I felt like, honestly, that was one of the downfalls of, like, the Venom movie, is I felt like there were so many moments that they tried to keep it in this, like, the action sequence where he's trying to leave and the guards, like, are stopping him. And he's like, you know, you don't want to do this, you know, mask, whatever. And he goes after them. Half of that scene is covered in either darkness or smoke. And I'm sitting there, and I'm just like, the whole reason this scene looks this way is because they don't want to show certain things because it's a PG-13 movie, you know? And I think they're trying to keep that rating because they do want it, that, you know, there are talks about trying to get Spider-Man in there, and they want kids to be able to see Spider-Man versus Venom or whatever. And they don't want Venom to be a rated R character. But if you're going to go that route, you know, you can't keep him a PG-13 character for, like, in the future, you know?
I'll let you go, Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand that point. And I mean, Venom is one of those characters that sort of walks that line between the two. Yeah. But, you know, we've never had an R-rated Joker. So I think there's a way to do it. I mean, for me personally, I would love for it to be, like, for them basically to, like, make it sort of a, like, Hannibal Silence of the Lambs thing, where, like, Cletus is in jail for most of that movie, but they're, like, using him in that way to help track down some other villain, and then, like, he gets out or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, I think there's a way to sort of, you know, imply stuff and show stuff and keep that PG-13 rating. Cause I had a couple people that, like, I work with, where they were asking me, like, hey, can I take my, like, 11-year-old, like, he loves Venom, can I take him to this movie? And I was like, I guess. I was like, he bites some people's heads off, but you don't really see, like anything. You know, the head or like you just like the body just like falls quickly out of the shot. So like, you know, so I think they can continue to walk that line, but you know, I think it could be tough. Like I can easily see an R-rated version, but I feel like they're going to try to keep trying to walk that line as much as they can, because there's much more money in the PG-13 level.
Well, yeah, but I feel like there's one throwaway line that kind of, for me, cemented this as this world will never see Spider-Man. Like, this Venomverse will never see Spider-Man. It'll this and then, like, the post-credit scene with the sneak peek into the Spider-Verse. Like, it to me, like, that post-credit scene, like, said to me as a viewer, okay, we are now embracing the Spider-Man verse. So there's the Spider-Verse of Miles Morales is going to unleash all these things. You're going to have this like superhero verse where Venom and Morbius and Silver and Black, where they're going to exist, and Kraven's going to exist in that. And then you're going to have the Spider-Man MCU version, and all of them are going to coexist. Like what DC does with their comics and with their television and animation and universe and properties, as well as the movies, like they're all existing separately. I feel like that's kind of what they're doing with this thing. And there's one throwaway line where Eddie and Anne are talking in the beginning, where they're at dinner, and she's talking about how he left New York, why they had to come to New York, and she's like, "Yeah, you got fired from the Daily Globe," like it, because apparently in this universe, Daily Bugle doesn't exist. Like to me,
that is from the comics, because Eddie Brock didn't work for the Daily Bugle; he worked for their rival newspaper.
Oh,
yeah,
that's only a Spider-Man 3 thing where they're both at the Daily Bugle.
They did that for Spider-Man 3. Yeah, in the comics, Eddie was actually a rival at the Daily Globe, a rival of Peter's.
I don't know. Like, to me, like, I don't know. It kind of cemented that they were just kind of, like, the final scene kind of cemented that this was a universe where you would never see Spider-Man. So, like, if you're not going to see him, you have all these other, like, really villainous characters, why not embrace that R rating?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you'll ever see Tom Holland Spider-Man, but they could easily bring in, you know, either a Miles Morales, they could bring in like a Ben Reilly who just happens to not look like Tom Holland or is not a clone or something. Like, I feel like there's a lot of different characters, like taking that multiverse idea, you know, they could bring in like Miguel O'Hara, the Spider-Man from 2099. Like, there's a lot of different spider characters out there that they could sort of fold in. But I don't think you'll ever see Tom Holland, Peter Parker interacting with Tom Hardy's Venom. Like, I could totally be wrong, and I would love to be wrong in a way. But, you know, I think eventually they'll get a Spider-Man in there. I just don't know which one.
And see, like, this is my thing, is that given the tone that it was trying to go for, and like your argument and like a lot of people's arguments with that this film should be rated R, like it would be cool if you're going to see a Spider-Man to have this kind of like withered, really like aged Spider-Man that knows Venom and stuff along those lines, like has fought him or maybe like has fought like, you know, Kraven, and maybe they're building to finally a Sinister Six movie, to where, you know, you introduce Spider-Man that way. Like, I mean, there is a couple ways that you could go, but I do agree that this film probably sucked. Like, I enjoyed this film for being PG-13, but you probably, to kind of like make the story structure a little bit better and give fans what they wanted, you probably could have gotten away with an easy R rating for this one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was kind of a little upset when I saw that it was rated PG-13, and that's one of the things that kind of jerked me out of the movie a couple times. So I loved the humor in this movie. The humor was great. There, I personally did. I enjoyed.
I'm with you there.
I enjoyed the banter of, you know, Eddie and the symbiote, and you know, there are so many scenes that, you know, were just made me chuckle and had a good time with. In that same token, It almost was trying to decide whether it was an action movie or like a comedy movie. in that token. And I feel like they put themselves in a box. Even the action sequences weren't, you know, what they could have been, you know, like the chase scene was, you know, okay at best, you know, but the best part of that was like the end. And, you know, like I said, the whole scene where the soldiers are trying to detain him, you know, half of that scene is in smoke. You don't even see half of that scene. Or if you do, you see it very blurred and you know, things are implied or whatever. And it's just like, you know, it was almost like we're going to make a comedy movie, but we're going to put a couple of these action sequences in there to pad it out so that people know it's a Venom superhero movie, you know? And I feel like they put themselves in that box because of that PG-13 like rating. And I honestly think that there is a way to do a rated R Carnage movie. You're absolutely right. There is. But kind of what Josh was saying, like the direction that they are headed, it's going to be better if it is rated R, because they do have a Morbius movie in the pipe. And how are you going to do a PG-13 Morbius? You know, I don't see how you could. If you did, it would be
Twilight.
Yeah, we've already seen it.
I mean, there's been plenty of other like PG-13 vampire movies, I think. I mean, like they found a way to make Morbius work on the Saturday morning cartoon from when, you know, I was a kid. So I'm sure there's a way to do it. You know what I mean? I just think, you know, I just think that the chance of them going down the Deadpool route is like pretty slim overall. You know, but like I said, I don't think the PG-13 is necessarily like the better creative decision. It's just that I think that that's where they're going to be like trying to get that money and sell those toys and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I think too that like it kind of goes and beckons to, you know, if you have all these properties with Spider-Man. And Spider-Man has a great rogues gallery. And let's face it, like, we're not going to see a lot of these villains ever face Spider-Man just because, you know, of how much of a rogue gallery he has. But at the same time, like, if you're going to go after and do characters like Venom and Carnage and Morbius, like, you should go for that R rating. Like, if you're going to put your chips in, go all in, like, yeah. just go for it.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we're moving on the road to hope. This is the point in our show where we talk to our guests of the week and we pull out a theme of either mental health or hope for this week. And one thing that I think that this film does really well is when There's a particular, like, these particular scenes and conversations between the Eddie Brock and the symbiote where, you know, he's calling Eddie a loser and he admits that, you know, on his planet, he's a loser. And I feel like, you know, but in the end, he ultimately, like, they ultimately become each other's, like, friends and companions, and they're not losers together, but they're like, they're one in the relationships. And I just feel like that really shows the power of friendship and the power that, you know, one person in your life really makes a difference. And like, if you can open up and have these conversations about, hey, I'm struggling with anxiety, or hey, I'm depressed and I need someone to talk to, like, there's such a high value in conversation. Ryan, what do you think?
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, it's having that one person that you can confide in and, you know, can just be yourself and express how you feel is super, super important. And I think, you know, that relationship between Eddie and the symbiote showing where they kind of both, you know, that they're drawn to each other for reasons other than like just convenience. Like, they have that something in common and they kind of come to an understanding, I think, is really cool.
Jake?
I definitely can agree with you. And honestly, like, when you get to that point where they have that conversation and, you know, Venom is like, well, I'm a loser too, you know, kind of thing. You know, on my planet, I'm kind of a loser. And the thought even hit me. It was just like, man, you never know what someone else is going through. You never know what someone else is dealing with. And if you're dealing with something, you never know how people are going to react, you know, because, I mean, using the example of the film, because that's what we're doing, you know, once that was shared, it was like, okay, well, we, you know, we need to like work together to get this done. We need to work together to take care of each other. Like us together is the best thing for both of us. But that would have never happened if, you know, communication was completely 100% clear. And I think, you know, a lot of times that fear does attack people to not share, like, what are people going to think? What are people going to say? What are people going to do? You know, all that is, you know, bullcrap. You know, you're not going to get help unless you speak up and you tell somebody, you know, what's going on. Until you do that, you're in it alone.
Yeah, I mean, even if you have friends, like it's very isolating to kind of carry that alone. And I remember when I went through like my season, like one of my seasons of depression, I bought it up those feelings so much. And by the time that, you know, 6 months into it, it was like, man, I am drowning. I need to communicate this feeling with somebody. All right. So with that, we're going to do final ratings for it. I'm going to start with Jake. Scale 1 to 5. What do you give this film?
I'm going to give it a 4. I have to give it a 4. I'm going to be honest. That 4 is very biased. I will completely own that. It is a very biased 4. You know, it was not a perfect movie. It definitely threw some curveballs in there that I did not expect as far as a moviegoer. But I enjoyed the heck out of it. It was, you know, visually it was awesome to just see the character on the screen in the way that he's supposed to be on the screen. And I definitely would probably, you know, go watch it again.
Ryan, what about you?
I'm going to go with a 2.75. but again, like I had a lot of fun watching it. You know, I think overall, like I said, it's not great, but it has like the moments that I love in this movie, like that restaurant scene we were talking about earlier, those couple moments during the end fight, like it has great moments in it. And I would say, like, you know, if you're a fan of Venom, you know, if you are in that category with Jake, I could totally, like, I'm not going to argue your 4 rating. It's just, you know, I always want to love a movie that much. And like I said, I think it was not great, but in some ways better than I expected. And I had a lot of fun watching it. So
I am going to kind of meet with you guys in the middle. I'm going to go 3 out of 5. And I say that mostly because I loved this movie as a whole. Like, I didn't love this movie as a whole, but I liked it as a whole. I felt like it had very strong development with the Eddie Brock character and the Venom, and like the symbiote relationship was really good. Tom Hardy really sold it for me. I liked like the balance between that and the Life Foundation, even though, but it's like the last act is just really sloppy. The villain could have been a little bit more developed, and there was really no need for the Michelle Williams character. So that is going to be a 3 out of 5 for me. So we got a 4.5 or 4 out of 5, 2.75, and a 3 out of 5. If you guys have seen Venom, what do you guys think? Make sure that you guys tweet to us at Victims and Villains, write to us on Facebook at Victims and Villains, or you guys can leave a comment wherever you guys are listening to this podcast right now. But with that, Ryan, where can people find more about The Shame Files and Cinema 76?
Yeah, so you can find The Shame Files podcast pretty much wherever you listen to podcasts. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. You can also find us at, you know, if you Google Shame Files podcast, we'll come right up, or search for us in your podcast app. You can find my writing at cinema76.com. That's cinema76.com. I did review this movie. I actually also this week did a look back at Spider-Man 3 to go back and kind of reassess Venom's look in that movie. And after being super disappointed with it for so many years, I think I kind of figured out what I liked about it and what I didn't like about it. So you can check those pieces out there along with a lot of other writing by some really great writers and friends.
And Jake, where can people find more about Identity?
Well, we do have a website. It's theidentitynetwork.com. So you can go there and find all of our different locations. If you want to get connected with us, all that information is there. If you want more of Haven, like my specific group, we're on Google Play right now trying to get in other places. We also have a Facebook page, Haven House. If you want to go like that, we do announcements and let people know what's going on. If you want to talk to me directly, I'm on Twitter at GloveBox8.
And you guys can find us everywhere, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and iTunes. Make sure that you guys like, follow, and subscribe to us. And if you guys like what we stand for, make sure that you guys support us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/victimsandvillains. Consider being a part of our Facebook group, Hope Culture, and sign up for our monthly newsletter. Not to mention, again, you guys can go to victimsandvillains.net/hope for resources if you guys are struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression. And until next time, remember to keep talking, nerd, talking hope, and speaking nothing else. And we are Venom. Are you?
Culture. Artist owned, fan supported.